Today's show is brought to you by Of A Kind, an online shop for emerging design. For more information, visit ofakind.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today I'm coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You can listen to the show live every Thursday at 11 a.m. on heritageradionetwork.org or download the podcast on iTunes. Today's show is dedicated to the idea of hard work. It's not fun, it's not short, it's not catchy or full of top 10 lists, but it's the thing that separates successful businesses from flash-in-the-pan companies, and it's the driving factor that builds the sort of experience and expertise that almost every field seems to be looking for these days. Today, I'm joined by two people who know an awful lot about hard work, my coworkers and the hardest working blog team around, Amy Azzurrito and Max Thielman.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
Good morning.
They're very happy they were able to brave the weather to join me today because it's freezing in New York this morning. But we're going to talk a little bit about something that's been inspired by sort of a general wave of comments and emails and things I've been reading on the internet lately, namely people who seem to want to have like a shortcut around any of the hard work and even some of the not fun stuff that comes with starting a business of any type. And I've been thinking about how valuable all that experience, even like the really tough stuff, is in terms of actually building the sort of confidence you need to get through the harder things that will eventually happen with a business. So today we're going to talk about the value of hard work. And it's not about short cuts or tips today. It's really about how you get through these things, why they're important, and sort of looking back on them. And then Max is going to have sort of an interesting angle for us as someone who's a bit younger than Amy and I and knows a lot about sort of being in that place of first jobs and what it's like to get through those things, but how much you can learn from them and why they're valuable. So let's start out with sort of the value of hard work. I want to read this quotation from Ann Landers that I always love, and she said, "Opportunities are usually disguised as hard work, so most people don't recognize them."
Wow, and I love that.
It makes me think about first jobs, and I'm sure we've all had first jobs that were terrible. I think my first official job was at a suntanning booth in Virginia Beach called Sunshine Strip, which sounds disgusting. I think my first official job probably. Mm-hmm. And I worked at the front desk and never used the suntan booth for like the first year I worked there. And I had to like clean toilet,
cheery,
spray down suntan beds, and not enjoyable work. But it really taught me a lot about A, what I didn't want to do growing up, which is important, but also just the actual like small nuts and bolts of what it was like to own a business and all the things that you're responsible for. So I think that was a good first dose. But I want to hear about your first. Amy, tell me a little bit about one of your first jobs.
Well, one of the things that, my first jobs. Oh, my goodness. Well, my first job, my dad forced me to get a job. He was like, "You're 16 years old, get a job." And I was nervous. I didn't know how to get a job. So I asked a friend who, the only friend I knew who worked, she worked at a pizza place. And so I said, "Do you think they would hire me too?" And she said, "Networking." I didn't know that's what I was doing. And she said, yeah, I think they have a place. And so I went and got a job. And once I started making my own money, I don't think I ever stopped. So but yeah, it was a pizza place. I reeked of pizza. And to this day, everyone who knows me knows that pizza is not one of my favorite foods for that reason.
It makes me so sad because that's like my favorite food in the whole world. Max, what was your first job?
I worked at a farm stand at a farmer's market when I was 11.
Oh my gosh.
And I got $25.
Is that legal?
11.
I don't think so. It was entirely off the books. I got $25 a day. And I think that the farmer who I worked for was like really into trying to teach me lessons every day. I wasn't allowed to use a calculator. I had to do all the math in my head.
Oh, wow.
Which was really tough, especially because the shoppers at the farmer's market always like to make an example of me by handing me $100 bills and buying, like a little quart of apples or something. So
What farm stand were you at? People were dropping $100 bills. And this was Buffalo?
Union Square.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Buffalo. People doing well at the farm stand.
Yep. People are into their
or they like to torture an 11-year-old.
That too.
Yeah. I think those sorts of first jobs are like the most terrible menial labor jobs, but they're good sort of experiences to take with you into your first, what I like to consider like your first real job in the field you want to go into. My first real job was in design PR. And I remember going into it thinking like, this is not what I want to do full time, but I know this is going to be important because it's in some way connected ever so thinly to the community that I very much want to be a part of. And while it wasn't exactly the job that I loved and I wanted to go to every single morning, I learned so much from it. And I think I primarily learned sort of how to make connections with people, because although it was my job obviously to reach out to people and form relationships with people, I had no experience ever doing that and just got thrown in there. How to write emails to people, how to talk to people on the phone, how to respond to people when they were upset. And I got stuck with all the unhappy people because I was like the lowest person on the totem pole. And so that's what I was dealing with. But looking back, I think those sorts of PR skills, especially dealing with unhappy people in PR, was one of the most valuable things, because then when I started my site, dealing with people who were unhappy, whether it was related to advertising or something that I'd written or just anything else on the internet, it seemed like old hat to just kind of go into it. But I think because I went into that job with such low expectations of like, this is going to be good, I'm going to learn like these basic skills, and then it's going to be like my first step towards many other steps in the direction I want to go in. I think because I didn't have huge expectations for that, it went really well. And before the show, Max, we were talking about people and the expectations they have for those first jobs. I would love to hear some of your thoughts on younger people going into those first jobs, because I think you're a bit younger than Amy and I, and you've got it's a bit more relevant and recent for you. So tell us a little bit about sort of first job expectations and what you think they should be, or how people can go into that with the right frame of mind.
Okay. Well, I mean, just as somebody who is from the, you know, so-called millennial generation, I think that I do have some useful insight for all of us millennials out there looking for our first jobs, et cetera. You know, in recent months, our generation, the much-feared millennials, has come under intense fire. Countless claims have been made against us, some of which are true, some of which are a bit off.
That's
but
not true.
The one thing that I think that we can all agree on is that us millennials, we are impatient, and I absolutely include myself in that. Whatever the cause may be, you know, the internet, video games, Twitter, blah, 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 blah. This impatience is something that I think tends to define us as a generation, but also hinder us, especially professionally. Of the many pitfalls that I see my fellow millennials falling into, one of the most frequent and troubling is this impatience, especially when it applies to careers.
Well, it's hard because it's impatience, but it's also a very tough job market, right? So it's like you have the two, like really impatient and a really hard job market. So it's difficult.
Yeah. I mean, millennials just as a rule tend to want things done, and they want them done now. I'm absolutely including myself in this. As such, when we complete college at the fastest rate possible, I might add, many of us expect to fall headfirst into the job of our choice, into the position of our choosing. Millennials, you guys need to calm down, take a chill pill. Life is long. We've got time. One of the biggest problems with this career-related impatience is the wrench that this seems to throw into our openness towards learning and gaining new experiences. I've known far too many people, too many friends who have given up or quit their jobs just because they were too menial or because it wasn't exactly what they expected.
No bueno.
No. I feel that this might have something to do with the fact that this world we live in, we're surrounded by very visible examples of success, whether it be celebrities on the red carpet, tales of Silicon Valley billionaires, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing that I think is really lacking from all of these success narratives is the fact that work went into this, and above all, time.
Right.
I mean, nothing in this world is absolute. People change, your career changes, your interests change. All of this stuff takes time, and I think it's really, really important to know that that's okay. There's so many benefits to be had from taking your time, to working up from the bottom, to learning as much as you possibly can. By starting from the bottom, for instance, you're able to really hone your skills without, you know, having too much impact or false career momentum. You can allow yourself to gain important, useful skills while still having the relative luxury mm-hmm. of being able to decide if this is something you actually want to do. You are exposed to so much more starting off from the bottom. You get to meet new and interesting people, gain insight, multiple perspectives mm-hmm. from numerous, you know, heights at the work ladder.
Yeah.
And you're able to slowly nurture your skills without forcing them. And this really allows for fleshed out, really developed skills and talents rather than stunted ones.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly, I think it's important to know that if this is something that you actually want to do, building these skills is really similar to building yourself up physically.
Mm-hmm.
Each step really helps towards making you stronger and more masterful at whatever you might want to do. I mean, there's a reason that, you know, some of the most famous Renaissance painters, for example, studied under their predecessors for years or mm-hmm. even decades, honing their skills, because that time that which can sometimes be a very long time, is really, really important in terms of developing your talents and skills.
I think that's something that doesn't exist in, like, Amy and, like, our generation, that exists in a slightly younger generation, is this idea of that, like, working for someone else for any amount of time is somehow a hindrance or, like, just a stupid decision. And even back in, I think in, like, 2005 or 2006, I went to a Pratt undergraduate, like, senior class mm-hmm. show, and there were some incredibly talented kids in that senior graduating class, some of whom have gone on to be very successful designers. And I remember asking them, like, what's next? What are you guys doing? Assuming to hear from almost every single one of them that they were going to be, like, apprenticing or working or doing something for, like, a larger firm or some other company. And every single one of them was like, why on earth would I work for somebody else? Which at the time, I remember thinking, like, this is amazing. What a great class of entrepreneurs. Mm. And looking back, I've watched the majority of those kids kind of stumble and end up eventually going to work for someone else. Not that that's a bad thing, because sometimes you have to learn a lesson that way, but at some point I think it's a good thing to learn under somebody else, because I think when you're in those lower stages of a job, you see the real side of a business that you do not see if you are immediately thrown to the top.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're sort of the intro assistant, whatever person, you're going to see what those people in that business are actually like, because they're not putting on their best faces for you.
Yep.
They're not, like, trying to impress you. They're just trying to, like, get something from your company or get something done. And mm-hmm. you get to see what people are really like, which is sometimes not enjoyable,
right.
but incredibly valuable experience. And I think, I mean, in a bad way, but in a good way for the employee, getting to know what people are really like is incredibly valuable, because I met so many members of the press that are still working members of the press when I was 23 working in PR, who were terrible to me.
Mm.
And that now, like 10 years later, because I'm running something that they have some interest in, are completely different to
mm-hmm.
me. And it's I don't forget the things that happened to me when
not,
I was 23.
Right.
And you can't, you know, hold a grudge forever. But I think it's important to know that, like, some people are great to everybody at every possible, like, rung of a company. And
be
then
nice
some people.
First.
Exactly. And
it's very important.
It's important to learn that stuff. And it's a good lesson to know that, like, you just have to be nice at every level
yes.
of the job. You should, and it's one of those rules that I remember you always read about, like, celebrities in magazines saying, like, be nice to the crew on a movie. And it's the same philosophy of, like, you should be friendly and helpful and kind to every person in a company, whether they're the person, like, dropping off the mail at your desk mm-hmm. or the person who's, like, signing the checks. I'm curious a little bit to talk about sort of the ways you push through the most difficult parts of a job. And I want to move a little bit past the idea of, like, these first jobs where, like, you're cleaning toilets and things like
mm-hmm.
that. But let's talk a little bit about the level of, like, your early jobs, whether you're starting a company or doing something different. So I want to talk about the sort of nuts and bolts of how you get through that. I'm going to start with Max, but first we're going to take a really quick break, because I just realized it's 11:15. So we'll dive into this in 1 minute. So we'll be right back with tips on pushing through the tough part of your first job.
Emerging design? Check out Of A Kind, a site that sells the pieces and tells the stories of up-and-coming makers. The site has featured over 200 designers and offers limited edition pieces you can't find anywhere else, along with the studio tours, travel guides, even recipes from the designers. To find out more, head to ofakind.com and sign up for the site's newsletter.
Hey, welcome back to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today I'm joined by the other two-thirds of Design Sponge, Max Thielman and Amy Azzurrito, and we're talking about the importance of hard work today and how we push through it and the lessons that you can learn from it. Right before the break, we were introducing the idea of sort of the actual nuts and bolts of how you get through the not-so-fun parts of any job in the early stages. And Amy, you had some very clear thoughts on that.
I did. I had something I wanted to say to all millennials, which is you have a secret weapon.
I promise this show is not going to be all about hating on millennials. Not.
You have a secret weapon. It's called the morning. I think that the morning is literally the secret. And I'm talking about getting up early and using those 2 hours when everyone else is sleeping to get the things done that are really important to you. So this is the time that I've personally used to learn Spanish. I've used it to write a book. I've used it to exercise when that was really important to me. And I found this this little book on Amazon called What the Most Successful People Do Before Breakfast. And it was it's a sort of celebration of the idea that you can use your mornings to either nurture your career, nurture your family relationship in some way, have an amazing breakfast with your children or something like that, or use it to nurture yourself through working out, meditating, something like that. And so to me, and you're a morning person too, and I think when you talk to a lot of successful people, one thing that you find out is they actually start their day really early, and that's how they're able to get ahead. And I use that time to do the things that are most important to me. And studies have shown, which I find this real, that your willpower actually decreases throughout the day. Have you read this? So it's like, because you're making all these choices, right? So by the time you get to, which is, they say, like, diets are broken in the evening, not the morning, which is true for me. cake, please. But so by the time you get to the evening, you're just spent. You're making all these decisions. You're trying to make the right choices. And the morning is really the time. And so to set yourself up for that, which might mean going to bed a little bit earlier, keeping a time log so that you can see what are you doing late at night. Not checking email first thing in the morning. If someone sends you an email at 8 p.m. at night, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., they don't expect a response at 6:30 in the morning. You don't have to do that. And you can use that time to really further your career, I think. I don't know.
It's a good point, because I think a lot of the difficult thing about any first job, even if it's in the field you already want to be in, even if it's your own company that you're starting, is that there's always going to be like some side project, something you want to do that you need to nurture but don't have time for. And almost everybody saves that for when they get home from work. It's like, all right, I work like 9 to 6, I get home, and then I'm going to work on my passion project. But you're exhausted at the end of
the day.
And whether you're 24 or you're 44, like, you're still going to be tired after a long day of work where you're assuming you're putting in your full effort. So using those morning hours is a really smart way to, like, wake up, you have your coffee, you're fully aware, you're fully awake, you're getting your best decisions put into that work that's so important to you. I actually use those mornings to plow through all of, like, the things I don't enjoy about my job, which is just, like, plowing through mass amounts of emails, dealing with admin work, taxes, payroll, like, all that sort of stuff that happens. I like to get done in the morning and just push it out of the way. And it feels like you get to check a bunch of stuff off of a list. It feels like you're getting a lot done. And then the next thing you know, it's, like, 9:30 or 10 a.m. and you can go into regular work having all this stuff just pushed out of the way so you can focus on the things that you actually like. And I think that applies to any not fun part of a job. But I think when we were talking about this topic before we got on air, I think Max brought up something really interesting about how pushing through these hard parts can, you know, very much often be about, like, what are the tricks to get you through it? But I like that, Max, you said something about it really being about taking pride and every everything
important.
You do, like, kind of having your name on it. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
I mean, for me personally, I think that's a huge motivating factor in enjoying and getting work done for me. I always try to be really, really proud of the work that I do. Mm-hmm. And this even applied when I was doing pretty like menial office jobs, like running copies for professors, shredding paper. I don't like, I think I always tried to do those things to the best of my ability, maybe put something a little bit extra in, use fancy paper or something. Right. And I think that doing something that you are proud of, maybe injecting a little bit of fun or something interesting into it, really goes a long way in making, A, you feel more a part of that process, and B, helping to motivate you a lot more in doing those things.
And it's a good habit for as things move forward.
And I think it's an important point to make that a lot of times when you're in sort of the earlier stages of any company, whether you're an assistant or something like that, the vast majority of companies are hiring from within and they're promoting from within.
That's so true.
So if you're somebody, let's say you want to be an interior designer and you're a brand new junior associate something at your firm, chances are the more impressive you are in-house doing your things there, letting people know that you go above and beyond for tasks, the more quickly you are able to be scooped up to fill in a spot from somebody who's not doing that.
I actually, you know what? I think that brings up a really good point, which is I think a lot of people feel like when they're at that first job that they need to be doing, like, the only way they can impress people is by like designing a room. Mm-hmm. So if they just want the opportunity to design a room, whereas actually the people who are designing a room just want you to like answer the phone or respond to email. So if you do that in a way that shows that you're really engaged, you're focused, you're helping them be the best they can be. That's how you get the opportunity. And I think it's about helping everyone be the best they can be, no matter what your role is on the team.
Absolutely. And I think one thing that's good to remember, and this applies to any field, any job, is that all those skills that you're learning, from emailing to helping somebody streamline their work process if you're their assistant, are things that will come into play at the highest level of any business. I think had I been thrown into my company having like 15 employees, which at some point we did a couple years ago, and I was managing all these people and I knew nothing about managing people. But thankfully I'd had at least a few years under my belt of what it was like to slowly take on people, work with them as an editor, deal with back and forth, deal with payroll, deal with insurance. None of those things happened overnight. But had they happened overnight, it would have been way more of a mess than it already was with me trying to learn those things. And I think a lot of people wish for just like a business to be handed to them. And yes, like the financial part of that would be amazing, to just be handed a functioning, profitable business right off the start. But you aren't handed those skills that come with the years of expertise. And I think it was like Queen Martha herself who said something about like you have to have experience to be an expert. And I think that's something that's really important. And I think it's not like, I hate when people say this word, but it's kind of true. Like, it's not a sexy thing to like work for like 10 years to learn something. But like, you don't get to be an expert by not actually putting in the hard hours and knowing what it's like to have things fail, to have things not go right, to have like hurdles and troubles and things like that. And I think it's easy to get distracted by examples of like seeming overnight success.
Because usually they never are.
But it's also
okay to be a beginner at things. Mm-hmm. Like it's okay to just sort of sit here and start out, and you don't need to feel like you, no matter where you are in life. I think sometimes we become self-conscious about being beginners. Mm-hmm. Like there's something wrong with us because we're starting and everyone else is further along. But that's just the place to start, and you have to start somewhere, and it's baby steps, one foot in front of the other.
Yeah. And I think we've been talking a lot about sort of the responsibility of the people who are the employees and not so much the employers. But I think if you're somebody who's owning a company, I think that's why it's important to be honest and transparent about the struggles and difficulties of running a company. And you don't need to only talk about the negative, but I think the more examples people have of very realistic, real life businesses, the better able people are to understand like how you get to where those people at the top are, which is a lot of work, a lot of trial and error. And I think even those examples that seem like overnight successes aren't. And I went to a blogging conference a couple years ago, and everybody kept holding up the example of Tavi Gevinson from Rookie as like, well, I just want to be Tavi. Like, I want to be like 16 and have a blog blow up overnight. And even Tavi didn't actually blow up overnight.
Started, it was
like
5 years
she
before,
was blogging for years and years and years. And I think that, yes, if you have exceptional talent, which Tavi's a great example of, it can let you rise to the top a little bit more quickly, but there are still years of work and talking to nobody and things like that, that are building, that you really have to kind of let marinate and happen overnight. And I think that it would be nice if sort of the creative community in particular was a bit more transparent about some of the things they were struggling with. And I think we've been really happy to have people on this show in particular who've been nice enough and vulnerable enough to talk about the things that are difficult and the things that are not so fun. And I think those are really good things for people to hear. And it's interesting to talk, like, I get emails about this show where people will not say publicly, but will say privately, like, this show was so good to hear because I've been dealing with this same thing, but don't feel comfortable talking about it online. But if people would actually talk about it, you would know we're all kind of in the same boat.
I heard this great, so if you read, I wrote a big post this week about how I've been learning Spanish and it has been hard, but in my mornings. But one of the things that I did in the beginning was I just made a commitment to myself that I was going to work every day and not worry about whether or not I could speak. I was just going to practice every day and see what happened. And so I got discouraged, and someone sent me a link to this article on Lifehacker. And the article is written by a software developer who had a bout as a stand-up comic. And at one point, he was backstage. Seinfeld had just started, and Jerry Seinfeld was there. He was still, like, going on. And this guy was like, this is my opportunity. And so he asked Jerry Seinfeld, he's like, what do you have any tips for someone starting out? And Jerry Seinfeld said, what you need to do, you need to get a big wall calendar, okay? And you need to get a big red magic marker. And every day that you work on writing, you make an X. Every day. And he said, if you do that for 3 or 4 days, you'll see this chain of X's. And you won't want to break your chain. Mm-hmm. So you'll keep going, and you'll keep making your X's. And Jerry said, all you need to do is just don't break the chain. Don't break the chain. And that's... that was his advice. I don't know if he still does that. I wish someone asked Jerry Seinfeld.
But I think it's a great that mark for
true. But I think it's a great way that, like, that is how you make a habit. Mm-hmm. That is the hard work. And so even someone like Seinfeld, who seemed, you know, who had a huge hit show, who was doing fairly, you know, very well financially, he was continuing to work on his craft, and it was still important to him to write every day and to chart his progress and to motivate himself.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that story.
I think keeping track of your accomplishments at even the earliest levels is a good way to keep yourself motivated. And I want to touch on something before we end a little bit about, and I think this is a question that will probably pop up about this topic, is how do you know when it's time to move on, to move on to the next place? Like, if the inspiration for this episode was how I was thinking about how it's important to, quote unquote, like, pay your dues, to kind of, like, work yourself up the ladder of any particular niche. But, like, how do you know when you're ready to leave, like, your comforting, nurturing first job of that? Like, what are the signs that it's ready to move on? For me, I wasn't comfortable to move on from my job until I had, like, a completely comfortable financial situation set up at another job that was, like, the next step up. But for each of you, what do you think are sort of the signs that you're ready to try something new?
Well, I think for me, it was the same thing. For a while, blogging was my morning activity. Mm-hmm. I did it in the morning until it became my full day activity.
Mm.
I did it in the mornings and the evenings, on the weekends and all, and I was freelanced. I think that's what you do, is you freelance until at a certain point you're like, wow, this could be full time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think unless you have some other financial means, I think that's what most people do. They just sort of wait until it has to be financial, I think.
Yeah. What about you, Max? Do you have any?
No, I don't really know. I'd say I'm still, like, very much in the beginning stages of my professional life, still, like, sort of paying dues in a number of respects. But, I mean, personally, like, when I've switched jobs or, like, changed, it's always been because there was a new door that was opened, mm-hmm. or I had gained some new skill.
Mm-hmm.
I think being aware of changes around you, grasping opportunities when they come, is very important.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think I'm still sort of figuring that out, though.
Yeah. Well, I think the idea of grasping opportunities is a good thing to keep in mind as we kind of bring things to a close for this episode. I think the importance of working hard is to sometimes notice that things that seem like they might be tough or might be a challenge to learn are actually the best opportunities to grow, learn something different, mm-hmm. and take yourself a little bit higher up that ladder. Because it's a long haul. Even if you're Martha Stewart, there's still long haul work to be done. Like, you can never rest on your laurels, primarily because every industry is changing so quickly now. And that's something we've talked about so much on the show already. But whoever you are, whatever field you're working in, your field is going to change. Even when you don't feel it changing, it's already changing. So the more that you're learning, the more that you're getting new skills and exposing yourself to new parts of your business that you've never tried before, the better. And I think one thing I want to leave the show on is the importance of community. And no matter what job you have, the people who work around you, your colleagues within your company and outside of your company, are the people that are the most valuable contacts that you are ever going to have, because they're the people who understand exactly what you're going through. And you don't get to build those friendships and those connections without going through the hard stuff, because everybody's going to want to have someone around them who knows what it's like to do what you do. And if you don't know what it's like to go through the difficult stuff, what it's like to lose an employee, what it's like to deal with, you know, paying a payroll, what it's like to deal with when things don't go right, you have so much less to talk about with those people, and you have so much less to connect with them on. And so much about connecting and building strong networking and connections with your community is about having shared experiences. So I hope that if you're listening to the show today, you can walk away with the knowledge that all of these tough things that you're going through, yes, they're not fun and they're not always the best part of doing what you love, but they're incredibly valuable. They're the things that connect you to the people around you. And those people are going to be the cohorts and the colleagues that really help you get to the next place in your job. So the next time you're pushing through a particularly tough patch at work, remember that all of this is really building up the tools that you have in your toolkit, and they're going to get you to the next step in your job. So from all of us here at Design Sponge, we're wishing you best luck for that tough patch of work. And thanks for listening, and we'll be back next Thursday with more business advice. So adios. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.